Well, it's that day again. Yes, it's Thursday, and it's a new month. We're now into September. Today's date is September the 2nd. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Enjoy the show. Hi all, and welcome to another week of the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. What a week it's been. But more on that later. Welcome to the show that turns conspiracy theories into facts. The show where predictions actually come true. What a novel concept that is within the alt-media circles. A show that asks you to think and act for yourself. A show that reveals that you are the saviour, not to follow the leader, but become leaders. A show for people who push their truth barrier to their crowns, not around their knees. A show that helps people, elevates people, heals people, supports people, and for that we are labelled by the non-thinking, non-truther people, a cult. Some cult that is. We'll be taught self-mastery and not to react to negative claims also, so their name-calling has no effect here. The all.connect and show that spans time, timelines and space. This is reality radio. Can you handle it? As one member pulled her child out of school this week and is going to homeschooling, she revealed a deeper lying issue ongoing in this country. And she said, I found out that from last school year and this school year, there were 10,000 families seeking help for homeschooling in Minnesota alone. 10,000. And this is why I kept asking for members to do a school curriculum. We could have TPC DVDs or CDs on homeschooling techniques in thousands of homes now. As the BBC decided to do a whole piece explaining why there is a shortage of chips, microchips, not Lay's chips, in the vain hope that you miss the obvious, they're going in vaccines. And perhaps the BBC should focus on why one of their colleagues, Lisa Shaw, died of COVID vaccinations. Shaw died due to a blood clot complications caused by the AstraZeneca vaccine 3 weeks after she had the first jab, according to a coroner this week, in what is believed to be the first time a COVID jab has officially been ruled the underlying cause of death in the UK. It seems it's only official when a clown, reader or puppet dies. But what about the other 1,558 who have died from vaccines in the UK? And is Lisa Shaw deemed as collateral damage by the MI5, MI6-led BBC? As the all-too-predictable false flag event occurred in Afghanistan that killed 170 people, the question is, was it US military equipment deliberately left behind that caused it? It is now revealed that the US military left behind $85 billion of equipment. How convenient of them. And I would suggest, seeing as they can fritter $85 billion of the public's money just like that, they should have their budget slashed by a minimum of $85 billion, seen as it's no big deal. Now, predictably, in the midst of it all, they applied a name change to the alleged terrorists. The new one is K. Is K only appeared in the intelligence circles less than a week before the event, or so we're told, and in the middle of it, there was a meeting with the CIA. Are you connecting the dots now? All these is followed by other letters would just be made simpler by adding M, ism, as in Zionism, which is the father of all political isms. But what group of people love to do name changes? As perhaps that is a clue as to who orchestrated it. And what this reveals is it's loop time again. And we are back from not blaming Russia and China for everything as that failed, so let's go back to blaming the Muslims again. I said last week the shift away from blaming Russia and China, and they were up to something. Well, clearly they were. Speaking of Muslims, the Channel 7 News in Australia did a hospital acting stunt using fake actors faking illness, and one of the sick was called Osama. I kid you not. Nice try, Channel 7, but an epic fail, as the comments on your post proved. Few are buying your fake shit, so quit selling it. And this is not without irony. The Channel 7 journalist Denham Hitchcock has revealed he's suffering from a heart condition as a rare side effect of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine. And the Spotlight reporter spoke from hospital after being diagnosed with pericarditis, which is a swelling or irritation of the sac-like membrane surrounding the heart that helps keep it in place. A bit like a universe membrane then, as above, so below. He says the extremely rare condition was caused by the first shot of Pfizer, which he received 25 days ago. Denham Hitchcock. Oh my, what a thriller that is. Right, we seem to be having a few sound issues. Hopefully that's okay. Right, some news. And news came in this week and of the reported death of the alt-media establishment and CIA clown, Robert David Steele. Now, Steele came to my attention many years back when he was installed into the alt-media, and he didn't sit right with me from the off. Ex-CIA was his description. Is there ever an ex-CIA? Or are they always on call, despite retirement? Now, Steele was involved with Neil Keenan during the infamous bust-up with myself and Cosmic Voice, and he went over to shut Neil up, as I was not only exposing Neil, but his agency accomplices at Langley too. Now, Neil, 3 months later, was declared dead, according to several sources, and a body double, 30 to 40 pounds fatter and 10 years older, replaced him. But was Steele involved in removing the now failed asset, Keenan? I don't know. But given Steele admitted he was a mercenary assassin for the CIA, one can deduce it that it was a strong possibility. Failed assets, you know, don't fare too well in agency circles, and their policy of dead men can't talk is echoed through all walks of life, not just the alt media. And Steele's propensity to turn up and be involved in many key groups or aspects of the alt media was the origin of me calling him the alt-media interceptor man. He always turned up like a bad penny. From collateral accounts to his disturbing leap into the burgeoning child sexual abuse by Elites via the Monarch programs and others, he came up with ITNJ with his Orsini family-backed sidekick with the fake stage name Sasha Stone. And they didn't just investigate the child sexual abuse, ritual and sacrifice abuse. They collected names of those who spoke out about it and then used bullying and intimidation tactics to discredit the speakers and then stifle the discourse. and ITNJ, in my opinion, was the agency's attempt to kill the narrative. Now, they say you shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but I'm delivering the facts of when he was alive, and they are, we're damning against we the people. Steele's legacy was borne out in our Clowns in Panic show, how he and the in-your-face agency joke, calling the group OSS, that set about spying on everything and everyone with their open source technology. And Steele said the public will become the intelligence, and sadly the gullible people who followed them all thought it would stop the rogue agencies. Wrong thinking. No, it was to make everyone an unpaid spy with their so-called smartphones. And that is his legacy. And we did more than most to expose the criminality and deceit of Robert David Steele. Others followed much later and added to it. I warned in a previous show that Steele would disappear. It is what failed assets do. And the great question is, did he disappear from being taken out and killed, given how ill he looked in recent pictures? Perhaps poisoning, or is death faked to hide him from the alt media exposure of him? Something that over time we will find the answer to. But this incident is a word of warning for all the agents within the alt media community, all 95%+ of them. Yes, you heard that right. And it's perhaps it's time to cut your ties with agencies and also come clean with the public. Right, where are we going next? Oh dear. You wish to know why America is splashing the cash so much recently. Well, here is why. And this is in part from Anna von Reitz, where she said the bearer bonds that are attached to the clearinghouse certificates, known as birth certificates, had been traded for gold more than a week and a half ago, and that Chief Fast Horse assumed authority to make such a deal. There was two choices: A, take the aforementioned bearer bonds and do the work to settle them, and so that they can never again be used to promote enslavement, or B, take the gold that was the purchase price of the slaves. The treasonous hierarchy of the US military took the gold. But the most important thing is that if you choose gold over your life, you choose death over life also. But one has to ask, just what is the lead banker of the world done to stop this? Why wasn't it blocked? Is, as I forecast in October last year, is she now rendered irrelevant in the scheme of things? And clearly what this shows is, they are no longer working with her to release the trust funds, as I stated last December. There is no funds coming from the trust anytime soon. Because once the Amiga platform was emptied and funds transferable to it denied, that was the end of the funds. But as the head of every bank and trustee, this deal should never have gone ahead. And she must be held accountable for her failure to block this deal. Because if, as I suspect, what they will use those funds for, a NATO war with Russia, which is the cover for the Hebrew Anunnaki to attack Iran, she will have blood on her hands. Period. And it proves the folly of being a one-person trust. Just as she was warned several times, if something goes wrong, the person with all the titles takes the flak. You wish to have a confirm that the Taliban is a US military and agency controlled entity? Well, here it is in their own words. General Kenneth McKenzie, commander of the United States Central Command, revealed an intelligence-sharing operation between the US and the Taliban on Thursday at a Department of Defense briefing just hours after the attacks at Hamid Karzai International Airport killed at least 12 US service members and 60 Afghan civilians, actually more. And according to McKenzie, the Taliban and US share a common purpose of finishing the ongoing evacuation mission by August 31st. They didn't. As long as we've kept that common purpose aligned, he said, they've been useful to work with. Really? And he said he didn't believe the Taliban intentionally allowed Thursday's attacks to occur, but conceded he didn't know for sure. Some intelligence agency, that is. Nevertheless, McKenzie said the US has been sharing versions of this information regarding threats to the airport with the Taliban so that they can actually do some searching out there for us. Really? Are they paid? Oh, I forgot. You left them $85 billion worth of equipment, didn't you? Although he did stipulate that the US cuts down the intelligence before handing it over to the Taliban. How nice of them. He also said that the US thinks attacks have already been thwarted by the terror group that the US deposed from power back in 2001. And he said the intelligence sharing program has been in effect since August the 14th. So the US are working with, not against, the great boogeyman of the 2001 era. Does anyone else not think this is bizarre? Coming soon, it will be revealed that the US works with ISIS, is ISIL, Al-Qaeda, which is Al-Qaeda, and the whole nest of vipers will be revealed, I'm sure. And some experts have criticised Biden, I don't know why, he's a complete waste of time, for not expanding the perimeter around the airport and instead entrusting the Taliban to secure the area. And McKenzie's announcements were delivered moments before Politico reported that the US provided the Taliban with a list of US citizens. Yes, you heard that correctly. Green card holders and Afghan allies. Really? Believing that the group would help shepherd those names to the relative safety of the airport. We're talking about terrorists here, or alleged. They're asking alleged terrorists to move their people and agents to safety. Are these people serious? But an official with the Defense Department said that basically they just put all those Afghans on a kill list. Indeed. Life doesn't mean much to them, you see. But in the midst of all this, or just before, CNN, Clown News Network, did an interview with the IS-K commander that left observers to wonder how the media outlet gained access to the terrorist leader and protected his identity 2 weeks, well, 2 weeks, before his group killed nearly 200 people. Now, the interview, which was aired on Saturday with the senior IS-K commander, telling CNN reporter Calissa Ward at a hotel in Kabul, was that the group was laying low and waiting for its moment to strike. Well, that moment apparently arrived on Thursday, when a blast for which ISK took responsibility killed 170 Afghans and 13 US servicemen outside the airport, and hundreds more were injured. Now, Ward called the commander's words eerily prophetic, but social media users suggested that the statement was more of a plot than a prophecy, considering the commander was speaking of what his group was about to carry out. and others argued that CNN aided and abetted the Kabul attack by having advance notice and apparently doing nothing to help prevent it or lead US authorities to the terrorist commander. I guess you know now why we call it Clown News Network or CINN. Unreal. Still on the media, we're going to focus on one country, Australia, but the world's media, and in particular Australia, and their media are all denouncing just how bad Joe Biden is, how he is mentally incompetent, incoherent, bumbling around, falling asleep during meetings with the Israeli Prime Minister last week. Now, I'm glad that the media are waking up to this fact, but mindful of all of them were pushing for Biden to be in power, remember, whilst they were all denigrating Trump at every opportunity. And the media have to take responsibility because they were responsible for convincing the bots into voting for this very ill and sick man, who should be in a care home, not supposedly the lead office of the world. Now Biden, for his part, refused to answer questions on Afghanistan. Indeed, Mr. Biden. Please tell the world that you are a puppet being operated out of Virginia and has reduced America to a global embarrassment. At least then we'll get some truth. And forget about Harris taking over. She is also deemed incapable and is a flip-flopper on opinions for a start. And this country badly needs strong leadership, and no one in office currently resembles anything like strong. And the great question while all this was going on was, where is Pelosi? The Drug Enforcement Administration officials have been instructed to avoid saying Mexican cartel or discussing the Mexican government or LE Corporation with Mexico when speaking with the media, according to an internal document. And the reason for the shift in messaging is unclear, but it comes as Mexican drug cartels continue to surge drugs across the southern border and adopt more advanced manufacturing and trafficking tactics. Now the DEA and the DOJ did not respond to multiple requests for comments on the email, and a portion of the email sent in mid-July stated, "We need to now avoid saying Mexican cartel or discussing the Mexican government in relation with drugs." Really? And they said, please continue using drug cartel, TCO, whatever that means, DTO, whatever that means. But I guess they just missed one acronym out, given they are behind most of the drug running, the CIA. And perhaps we should just call it the CIA cartel then, if you can't call it Mexican. And it's yet again more liberal word salad bullshittery. And where does this must not offend everyone end? It's a good question. But soon you will not be able to speak at all with these idiots. The Justice Department on Wednesday asked the Missouri court to invalidate a new state law that prohibits state and local officials from enforcing federal firearms laws, arguing it violates the Constitution and has already done harm to public safety in the state. Now, federal prosecutors filed a statement of interest in a challenge by the Missouri law brought by St. Louis and Jackson counties, which seeks to block enforcement of the measure. And the Justice Department told the Cole County Circuit Court it supports a finding that the law known as HB 85 is unconstitutional and an order halting its enforcement. Now, HB 85 has caused and will continue to cause significant harms to law enforcement within the state of Missouri, and the Biden administration wrote this in its filing. Now, HB 85 is also plainly unconstitutional, and prosecutors warn the law has already hindered law enforcement efforts to promote public safety in the state and is undermining law enforcement activities as it interrupts federal, state and local partnerships. Now, it was signed by the Republican Governor Mike Parsons in June, and the measure at the centre of the legal battle enacts a $50,000 fine on any law enforcement agency with officers who knowingly enforce federal firearms rules. Nice to see more evidence of the people fighting back and some common sense at the DOJ for once. A young Chinese woman has highlighted issues that's been going on in Dubai, where she was held for 8 days at a Chinese-run secret detention facility in Dubai, along with at least two Uyghurs, in what may be the first evidence that China is operating a so-called black site beyond its own borders. Now, the woman, who's 26 years of age, Wu Huhan, nearly Wuhan, was on the run to avoid extradition back to China because her fiancé was considered a Chinese dissident. And Wu told the Associated Press she was abducted from a hotel in Dubai and detained by Chinese officials at a villa converted into a jail, where she saw or heard two other prisoners, both who were Uyghurs. Now, she was questioned and threatened in Chinese and forced to sign legal documents incriminating her fiancé for harassing her, she said. And she was finally released and is now seeking asylum in the Netherlands. But whilst some of these black sites are common in China, Wu's account is the only testimony known to experts that Beijing has set one up in another country. And such a site would reflect how China is increasingly using its international clout to detain or bring back citizens it wants from overseas, whether they are dissidents, corruption suspects, or ethnic minorities like the Uyghurs. And the great common sense question is, why can't they just leave people alone? What harm have they ever done to China? And has anyone asked why they are pursuing them? The media won't. The US online payments giant said Monday it would let British customers buy, hold and sell digital currencies starting this week. And it marks the first international expansion of PayPal's crypto product, which launched in the US in October last year. And apparently it's been doing really well in the US. Yeah, with bots, just saying. And Jose Fernandez de Ponte, who's PayPal's general manager for blockchain, crypto and digital currencies, said we expect it's going to do well in the UK as the US. Now, PayPal's crypto feature lets customers buy or sell Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum and Litecoin with as little as £1. And users can also track crypto prices in real time and find educational content on the market. Educational. Slavery system. And just like the US version of the product, PayPal is relying on Paxos, a New York regulated digital currency company, to enable crypto buying and selling in the UK. And PayPal said it's engaged with the relevant UK regulators to launch the service. And so let's have a look at Paxos, people, shall we? Sheila Bair, former chairman of the FDIC. Bill Bradley, former senator of New Jersey and chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. Patricia Kemp, worked for FinTech. Jim Manzi, former chairman of Lotus Development, which was taken over by IBM. Scott Malpass, worked for the Vanguard Group, you know, the birth certificate people, along with Fidelity. And Brian Stern was the former head of BlackRock. Well, I never. What a seedy collection of insiders in government, technology companies and greed-based harvesting companies. And it comes as no surprise that PayPal is involved in this. And I just hope Paxos charge them excessive fees like they are now doing to their customers. A recent change in their policy has taken another 17 cents off every transaction. And so those that are paying $1 to the TPC, we are now only receiving 49 or 51 cents. Utter robbers. But we are looking into getting something for the website into paying directly into our bank and cutting them out. The Texas Governor Greg Abbott has a new executive order that bans COVID-19 mandates, regardless of a vaccine's approval status with the US Food and Drug Administration. And additionally, Abbott says the subject of vaccine mandates will be added to the state legislature's special session agenda. And vaccine requirements and exemptions have historically been determined by the legislature, and their involvement is particularly important to a patchwork of vaccine mandates across Texas. Now, shortly after the news, many bots took to Twitter to call out Abbott's latest action, and former San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro tweeted, "The order isn't about Texans' freedom." What is it about then? He says this: "This is about Abbott playing political games with a deadly virus to placate his extreme right-wing base." Well, I never. One has to ask, is Julian Castro even human, given his picture? Very creepy looking, one has to say. And the point is, there is no right or left-wing base, Mr. Castro. They are prepared labels for idiots like you to follow and attack. Now, the San Antonio Independent School District also told the reporter that it will continue to move forward with its vaccine mandate for all of its employees. Simple solution, it's time for all their employees to sue the school district then, with the backing of the parents of children who attend those schools. Because once mandate takes hold, others will follow. Still in Texas, and this is a more positive action news, the next few pieces. And beginning on August the 9th, 2021, Texas Right to Know delivered the Omega Brief to open offices of Texas representatives, Texas senators, Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Speaker Dade Phelan, Department of Public Safety Capitol Office, and on August 17th, an overnight delivery to Attorney General Ken Paxton and the State of Department of Health and Human Services. Now, summarised from July 11th, interview by David Martin and PhD by Rainer Fulmeich, the Omega Brief suggests that the current pandemic is a criminal conspiracy and racketeering enterprise that had its beginnings back in 1999. And the brief includes Dr. Martin's Fauci COVID dossier that outlines 8 federal criminal charges from evidence contained in the patent records. And the Omega Brief is a consolidation of evidence of criminal activity provided by national and international expert witnesses, revealing individuals who are responsible for the coronavirus pandemic. And they say there is reasonable evidence that federal agencies under the direction of Anthony Fauci established treatment guidelines mandating a chosen narrative to direct the actions of state medical boards, physicians, hospital and health provider administrators, and state and local DSHS, with premeditated intent to prevent early treatment to escalate fear and death totals. And that was according to Sheila Hempel, the CEO and author. Now, the following quotes are referenced by paragraph number of the interview with Fauci and others. And it says, in 1999, Anthony Fauci funded research at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where the NIAID built an infectious replication defective coronavirus that was specifically targeted for human lung epithelium. I'm going to repeat that again. Fauci funded research at the University of North Carolina where the NIAID built an infectious replication defective coronavirus that was specifically targeted for human lung epithelium. In other words, we made SARS and we patented it on April 19, 2002, paragraph number 12. And per the statement made by Peter Daszak, head of EcoHealth Alliance, reported in the National Academies of Press publication on February 12, 2016, he said, we need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. February 2016, he said that. And he said, a key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. Paragraph number 48. And evidence establishes that in order to achieve world distribution of an annual or biannual mandatory influenza and or coronavirus vaccine, the following possible goals would be necessary, he said. Goal 1, create the new normal campaign. Oh my. For the purpose of getting people to accept universal pan-influenza, pan-coronavirus vaccines, as scripted by Merck back in 2004, and adopted by the World Horror Organization in 2020. And he said, to achieve this goal, the following steps would be necessary. 1, create simulations and exercises of a pandemic. 2, create a new virus, though it's not really new. 3, leak the virus. Now, there wasn't a lab leak. This was an intentional bio-weaponization. 4, declare national, state, county emergencies. And 5, create media fear and hysteria. Goal 2. I wonder which president said these two words. Warp speed vaccine development. This was 1999. Didn't Trump mention warp speed? It was necessary for the CDC, which directs state medical boards and state departments of health services, and the National Institutes of Health, which directs physicians and hospital policies, to develop guidelines that would effectively ensure there would be no adequate, approved, or alternative treatment available in order to meet emergency use authorization criteria for the COVID-19 vaccine development. So they were blocking any treatment. And he said these guidelines intentionally prohibited early, effective treatments that would have saved lives to protect the COVID-19 vaccine development. Goal 3, COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers to conduct trials on children with the intent to receive full FDA approval in order for the COVID-19 vaccines to be added to the childhood vaccine schedule, so that all COVID persons are shielded from liability with the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. So what they're saying is they're going to vaccine the children and they're covered under the Children Vaccine Injury Act. With full FDA approval, vaccine manufacturers lose their liability immunity from the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, PrEP. Goal 4. Implement worldwide mandates for vaccine compliance with bio-evidenced identification mark and force vaccine compliance through bio-trackable passports to buy, sell or travel. Bio-evidence identification mark forced vaccine compliance through trackable passports. Identification mark. Oh my, we're back to cattle numbers again. And it said, on behalf of Texans and humanity, we plead for Governor Greg Abbott and General Ken Paxton to defend us and enforce SCR 12 to immediately halt state agency and business adherence to CDC and NIH guidelines and command actions necessary to prosecute all perpetrators for racketeering and for terror to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, according to Sheila Hemphill. Now, SCR 12 was signed by Governor Abbott on June 16, 2021, claiming sovereignty under the 10th Amendment to the US Constitution over all powers not otherwise enumerated and granted to the federal government by the US Constitution, serving notice to the federal government to halt and reverse certain mandates, and providing that certain federal legislation be prohibited or repealed. Good stuff. Now this is an update, another positive action news from one of our members, and it says this: a truck blockade planned for this week for Australia and New Zealand. And she said, in all my lifetime up to this point in time, I've never felt quite so convinced that we are in a situation where if people don't wake up to what is happening around them, we could be totally screwed. And for an optimist like myself to say that, it's really saying a lot. We seem to be surrounded by sleepwalkers or bots. And every time I go to the supermarket, only to find that I'm the only one not wearing a mask, not signing in, and not filled with fear of getting too close to other people, and I despair. But then I get out into the community and meet with others who are on the same page, and there are plenty of us, and find that things aren't quite as black as they seemed before. And last Sunday, A week last Sunday, a group of 5,000 to 6,000 of us got together on the New South Wales Queensland border to protest against the new and totally illegal requirement that everyone entering Queensland is an essential worker, because they won't allow anybody else in. again, both illegal and unconstitutional. You must be jabbed with the experimental COVID genetic modification device before being allowed across the border. But without any planning, this event came together, uniting people who had decided they had had more than enough of restrictions, government overreach and tyranny. And together we braved checkpoints, the 5 kilometre radius and other arbitrary rules to declare our independence over government tyrants. It was a beautiful day when even the police seemed ashamed of having to follow orders they obviously did not agree with. In fact, the outcome was so positive it has been decided that this event will be held every Sunday at noon until the border restrictions are lifted. Encouraging stuff, and that leads us to more positive stuff going on in Canada. Justin Trudeau, or Turdo, has been forced to cancel an election rally. In fact, there was more since that, after a crowd of angry protesters ambushed the event, and the Canadian Prime Minister had been set to address supporters. Does he have any? If so, why? In Bolton, Ontario, but the event was called off over alleged security concerns. Now, dozens of protesters gathered at the rally and shouted obscenities before Mr. Trudeau could speak, and the Prime Minister is hoping to secure a majority in a snap general election that he called earlier this month, or last month. But in recent days, his canvassing efforts have been dogged by protests against COVID-19 vaccines and government restrictions. And Mr. Trudeau did a runner. And it's more good stuff. And we need to keep putting these parasites on notice. They are weak and shameless, remember. But getting in their faces creates much fear within them. They're not used to it. Get in their faces. Hundreds of French citizens boycotted vaccine passports by arranging a picnic and eating right in front of nearly empty vax-only bars and restaurants. Now, that's what I call clever activism. Thinking on your feet and a safe, poignant and effective way to raise attention. More positive news before we go into the break. And this was a letter from a teacher that came out this week. And she said, "Today was my last day as a public school teacher. I have officially resigned, effective immediately. I know what I stand for and I know what is right, and this is not right. Segregation and discrimination against groups of people used to be illegal," she said. "And it blows my mind that these things are being accepted in front of our own eyes, our children's eyes, and in our communities. Our rights are being ripped right out from under us, and I, for one, will not allow this, not for myself, not for my children, and not for my family. I will not be part of a system that is doing more harm than good to our children. I will no longer be part of this problem and the divide it is causing." And she said, "If you know me or if I have taught your child, you know that this is my life. I eat, sleep and breathe teaching. Everything I do has always been for my students. I know how much they needed me this year more than ever. But what they need the most is someone standing up to this and fighting for their future. I will never comply to these illegal mandates that violate my constitutional rights. I have a right to choose what is best for me, and they have a right too. The time is always right to do what is right. Silence is an answer. Ignoring this is an answer. And sweeping this under the rug and following marching orders is not the right thing to do. I am scared, nervous, sad, angry, frustrated and relieved and happy all at once. I don't need a classroom to teach and I won't stop teaching. I'm so excited on the journey ahead and being able to teach without restrictions or modern day classroom bullying of being told what to do and how to serve my students. Kona Wiener Elementary, you lost a damn good thing when this teacher handed in her keys today. Ashley Oyama. Hear, hear, Ashley. Right, we've got a small amount of COVID BS news to update this week. And New Zealand has reported what it believes to be its first death linked to the Pfizer COVID vaccine. Oh, certainly topping up UK, Australia and New Zealand this week. An independent vaccine safety monitoring board said the woman's death was probably due to myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart muscle. And quite frankly, that is what stupidity gets you these days. You know, taking a vaccine for an illness you didn't have, unlikely to get, and even if you did, your recovery rate is 99.97%, and it's beyond stupid at this point. You know, weak people riddled with fear is what's produced these deaths, injuries, economic collapse, lost businesses and jobs, lockdowns and also masks. Weak people riddled with fear. Now, the official figures can't be wrong, can they? So here are the official figures of vaccine issues. The EU COVID death and side effects updated to August 14th. 21,766 deaths and 2,074,410 side effects, of which over 50% are serious. The UK figures up to August 4th, 1,559 deaths and 1.135 million adverse effects. America's figures up to August 6th, 12,791 deaths and 682,873 adverse effects. 1,270 premature baby deaths following the vaccine. And a health impact newsreader from Brazil alerted us this week to official news media reports stating that during a 5-month period, over 32,000 people in Brazil have died following the COVID-19 injection. And there you have it. Israel is now requiring anyone over the age of 3 to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test before entering many indoor spaces as it tackles a sharp rise in infections, all of which proves their forced vaccinations program doesn't work. Otherwise, figures would have gone down drastically, not the other way. But I suppose we have to give them a little bit of credit, and it makes a change from the Talmud version of it, as it's okay to have sex with a 3-year-old and one day. I suppose asking them for a vaccine is a bit less dangerous, or maybe not. But restaurants, cafes, museums, libraries, gyms and pools are among the venues covered by the Green Pass system. However, proof of immunity is not needed to go into shops or malls. Now, the country's COVID-19 czar said it was at war with the virus, despite its world-leading vaccination program. Of course, it's leading the world. It always was. And the government has sought to combat the surge by reinstating the restrictions it lifted in mid-June and by bringing back the Green Pass, which shows whether someone has been fully vaccinated or has recently recovered from COVID-19 or tested negative in the previous 24 hours. Now, before last Wednesday, only children aged 12 and over who have been eligible to get a vaccine since June, and adults were required to present a Green Pass. And it will also now apply to children between the ages of 3 and 11. And they said their tests will be funded by the government. I'm sure they will. As they are ineligible for vaccination unless they are 5 or older and are considered at a significant risk from COVID-19. Now, the approximately 1 million residents, about 11% of the population, who have not been vaccinated yet despite being eligible, must pay for their own tests. Seducements again. Now, Israel has also been given third doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine to people over the age of 50, medical workers, and those with underlying health conditions. And so far, some 1.1 million eligible people have received their booster shots. They're already out in Israel. Now, the Israeli health care provider Maccabi, which covers about a quarter of the population, said that a third Pfizer dose was 86% effective at preventing COVID-19 infection in people over 60. That is even less than the original vaccine efficacy estimates. So it's now down to 86%. When they were saying it was 90 to 93. But Green Pass, Green Deal, makes one think of the Green Colour Program and Dr. Green and the Mengele Program. Maybe one and the same. Scott Gottlieb, who stepped down as the FDA commissioner in April, will join Pfizer's board of directors, according to the company last Thursday. Now, Gottlieb resigned from the FDA this spring after nearly 2 years at the helm. But one has to ask, is that not a conflict of interest between Pfizer and the FDA? No, just me. Now, during his tenure, Gottlieb advanced a number of prescription drug policies, including to push the FDA to speed up generic drug approvals and use its powers to encourage wider use of biosimilars or copycat versions of complex and often costly biologic drugs. So, what are biosimilars? Well, these are repackaged drugs after expiry of the patent of previous drugs. So, how are they made? Listen closely. By cloning of human genetic material and the development of in vitro biological production systems has allowed the production of virtually any recombinant DNA-based biological substance for eventual development of a drug. Monoclonal antibody technology combined with recombinant DNA technology has paved the way for tailor-made and targeted medicines. And depends on what they really mean by targeted, doesn't it? Gene and cell-based therapies are emerging as new approaches. And recombinant therapeutic proteins are of a complex nature, composed of a long chain of amino acids, modified amino acids, derivatized by sugar moieties, folded by complex mechanisms. Sounds like they're making bread. And these proteins are made in living cells. Remember the proteins bit? Luciferase and all that stuff. Was it Exposé 2? These proteins are made in living cells, bacteria, yeast, animal, or human cell lines. And the ultimate characteristics of a drug containing a recombinant therapeutic protein are to a large part determined by the process through which they are produced. The choice of the cell type, development of the genetically modified cell for production, the production process, purification process, formulation of the therapeutic protein into a drug. Now, after the expiry of the patent of approved recombinant drugs, for example, insulin, human growth hormone, interferons, erythropoietin, monoclonal antibodies and more, and any other biotech company can develop and market these biologics, thus they are called biosimilars. Now, who are the manufacturers? Well, it's no surprise, it includes Pfizer, who have complained about roadblocks stalling biosimilars from becoming widely used. And having Gottlieb to advise the company could now help Pfizer, who are one of the largest biopharmaceutical companies, navigate the landscape. Now, in a tweet, Gottlieb said he is honoured to join the board to promote medical innovation, advance patient care, and secure access to better healthcare outcomes for families around the world. Really, you are jesting, surely. But right in the middle of all that, cloning of human genetic material for drugs. How was the material acquired, one must ask? And these bio labs need to be reined in, as the public has no idea what these people are up to, and blindly trusting their science and methodology has proven over the last 18 months as pure folly. We need an independent global assessment team to analyse all these labs and what they're doing before these psychopaths turn us into some form of the greys. Gottlieb, born in New Jersey, born to Jewish parents. Well, I never. The Archdiocese of Chicago this week announced all employees and clergy will be required to get vaccinated against the COVID-19. Really? And will take effect on October the 4th, giving unvaccinated employees 6 weeks instead of the original 5 from FDA approval to get their shots. And he said, we are providing an extra week to allow more time for individuals to plan and schedule the vaccinations. How benevolent of them. Except the FDA is not given approval. Or are they medical profits now as well? And they said, while people will have an opportunity to request a medical exemption, religious objections will not be considered. How interesting that is. Religious objections will not be considered. Are they culling their flock? Now, the Archdiocese and its agencies, apt word there, including Catholic Charities and Misericordia, join a growing list of organisations requiring the shots for most workers and patrons as the Delta variant surges. No, the only thing that surges was the vaccinations. And he said, we've made this decision convinced that this is the best way to stop the spread of this deadly illness, according to Cardinal Blase J. Kupich, who is the Archbishop of Chicago. And he said, following the lead of Pope Francis, we encourage everyone to be vaccinated as an act of charity. Really? So putting yourself at great risk of death and serious side effects for an illness 99.97% will never get is now considered by the Church of Psychopaths as an act of charity. Oh dear. Religious exemptions to vaccination cannot be supported by Catholic teaching, and I've instructed our pastors not to grant them. Well, what is exactly is Catholic teachings? Believe in fake sky gods with anger management issues, fake books, torture, murder, harvesting, war, pedophilia, the mafia, and quite frankly, the most bizarre conspiracy theories ever, it seems to me. Catholic teachings. And they said more than 90% of its more than 15,000 employees have already been vaccinated. And the policy, which does not apply to volunteers, is set to take effect 6 weeks after the FDA approves any of the three COVID shots. And the vaccines currently are only authorized under emergency use. And unvaccinated people will be required to get tested weekly and wear masks in archdiocese facilities at all times, according to the new policy. Additionally, unvaccinated people may be prohibited from entering the facilities or unable to use certain amenities like lunchrooms. What happened to the church accepted all God's children? Does their God now consider unvaccinated people as outcasts? You have to ask. Well, after all, he did throw out his first children for eating an apple, for sore sakes. Unreal. Still in Chicago, and Chicago's lead puppet for the coronavirus scam is Allison Arwoody. So let's look at her connections, shall we? Dr. Allison Arwoody, MD, MPH, is the commissioner for the Chicago Department of Public Health. She was at CDPH for 4 years in the role of chief medical officer before being nominated for commissioner in 2019. She moves jobs fairly quickly, it seems. As chief medical officer, she oversaw the, quote, disease control, environmental health, emergency preparedness and behavioral health divisions. She also worked on disease outbreaks, immunization promotion, TB response, substance misuse and more. Now, prior to the CDPH, Dr. Arwoody worked for the CDC as an epidemic intelligence service officer. An epidemic intelligence service officer. What in the name of Satan's portion does that mean? You know? She earned a bachelor's degree from, check, Harvard University, and a master's degree in public health from Columbia University. She completed medical school and clinical training at, check, Yale University. She is a board-certified internal medicine physician and pediatrician, and she continues to see primary care patients as a volunteer at Chicago's largest free clinic. All those degrees and training are not a single ounce of common sense. Or I guess we could say extra money in her pocket supersedes her background knowledge. Final piece of COVID news, it's not actually COVID, but it's related to vaccines. Because a new research paper published in the journal Toxicology Reports, and the author Neil Z. Miller found out that out of a total of 2,605 infant deaths reported to the VAERS between 1990 and 2019, 58% occurred within 3 days of a vaccination and 78% occurred within 7 days of vaccination. Infant deaths caused by vaccines. Other items. This was part of an Amazon policy, and if it's true, one can never be certain these days. It highlights more the bizarre world they live in and their fear-based rhetoric and prophecies. Sections 42.10, acceptable use and safety critical systems. Your use of the lumberyard materials must comply with Amazon's acceptable use policy. The lumberyard materials are not intended for use with life-critical or safety-critical systems, such as use in operation of medical equipment, automated transport systems, autonomous vehicles, aircraft or aircraft control, nuclear facilities, manned spacecraft, or military use in connection with live combat. However, this restriction will not apply in the event of the occurrence certified by the United States CDC or successor body. Or successor body? Is the CDC being replaced? Of a widespread viral infection transmitted via bites or contact with bodily fluids that causes human corpses to reanimate and seek to consume living human flesh, blood, brain or nerve tissue, and is likely to result in the fall of organized civilization. Oh dear. It's also bizarre. But what this echoes is the zombie virus the clowns wanted to run on the populace in 2017 and failed. So in 2020, they ran the stupidity virus on the populace instead. And oh, how that worked for them, all too well, sadly. But it has brought us great benefits for those awakened, as finally full proof of the stupidity of the establishment, including governments, politicians, experts and the mainstream media, has all been laid to bear. And also it exposed just how many compliant and stupid people there are, and how we all have to work harder to protect our sanity, our being and our world. We'll be back shortly. Right, on we go. The typical 40-year-old millennial who has 128,000 in debt is not nearly as wealthy as their parents were and is known as a geriatric. Now, the oldest millennials turned 40 this year and they have less wealth, more debt, and about the same earnings as past generations at their age. And they also straddled the digital worlds of old PCs and today's social media apps. And the oldest millennials enter middle age this year. Now the generation is now aged between 25 and 40. And yes, like everyone, millennials are aging, but it's a hard concept to grasp when the media narrative has painted millennials as young, frivolous 20-somethings who love selfies and can't afford anything because they spend too much money on avocado toast. But it's an inaccurate picture of the generation, which has been shaped by technological advancements and a broken economy. But the typical 40-year-old millennial especially doesn't quite align with this image, and many feel they embody some characteristics of both Generation X and millennials, having experience with both analog and also the digital worlds. But the millennials are known for battling a series of economic challenges, from student debt to the Great Recession. And the typical 40-year-old millennial bore the brunt of the financial crisis, which has left them with less wealth and more debt than past generations at their age. But compared to their younger generational peers, they have less student debt and are more likely to own homes and have kids, and it's a sign that many have recovered from the financial fallout. Or perhaps they're just more savvy than people give them credit for, you know. And these were the last generation before the input of the children with the extras in the 2000s. And just perhaps they are leading the way in a new humanity and can go on and teach the next generation a better way to be, act and think in life, devoid of the excessive debt cycle trappings older generations bought into. Bank of America, Lowe's and Truist, who is also SunTrust and BB&T, sponsored a United Way critical race theory, racial equity 21-day challenge, claiming that America is systemically and institutionally racist, encouraging participants to decolonize their minds and to get woke at work, and urging white people to cede power to people of color. Now, Christopher Rufo, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, first revealed the critical race theory challenge, presenting documents he obtained from a whistleblower. And Rufo reported that Bank of America encouraged North Carolina employees to undertake the racial equity 21-day challenge, but support for the critical race theory training extended far beyond that Bank of America branch. And the Truist Financial Corporation, Lowe's and Bank of America served as presenting sponsors and, quote, equity champions for the challenge, while Ally Financial, Atrium Health, Duke Energy and McGuire Woods joined the efforts as equity ally sponsors. Ernst & Young, First National Bank, Gambrell Foundation, Grant Thornton and Knight Foundation joined the effort as equity partner sponsors. And yet again, it's banks dictating policy, all designed to create friction and develop more wars, of which they make more shekels off both sides. But the politicalization of schools has to be stopped. And the quickest way to fight back is boycott these banks. Remove your money and cut them off. Boycott Lowe's as well. Although the alternative is the CIA-owned Home Depot Brigade. And maybe you can buy tools and stuff online from suppliers that are not being taken over by Amazon. And that would be a good thing to do also. More word magic for you. I may do a longer piece next week. Time was short for me this week. And yet again, it backs up our From Russia With Love series. And the phrase, Frey Masson, P-H-R-E, M-A-S-S-E-N means brother of the sun. The fake solar being is Ra or Amun-Ra. Freemason, Freemason. We have spoken many times of speaking, thinking and acting from the heart, not the head. The heart has more neurons than the brain, and so you're more capable of thinking from there than the head as well. And the other benefits of it is the heart cannot be mind controlled like the brain. Your brain often argues with you in decision making due to the split of the hemispheres, and this is overcome by self-mastery and recognizing parts of you that don't serve you and adapting more of the parts that do. Now the sword effect completes that inner anomaly once it is perfected. And having got free of the solar plexus and throat chakra blocks that society imposes on you, but also you allowed it. Now the solar plexus is the third chakra, and in my opinion is linked to the astral level. And this is why society uses the mind control meme of go with your gut, or what does your gut say? You know that's a program because it doesn't make sense. Well, guess what? Science has just proven all that we have revealed on our show in relation to the heart. A scientifically controlled study conducted by German researchers at the University of Kassel has shown that while the chest area of an average person emits only 20 photons of light per second, someone who meditates on their heart center and sends love and light to others emits an amazing 100,000 photons per second. 20 to 100,000. I guess the term used in our show, light up your beacons, makes more sense now, doesn't it? 5,000 times more than the average human being. And numerous studies have also shown that when these photons are infused with a loving and healing intent, their frequency and vibration increases to the point where they can literally change matter, heal disease, and transform negative events. Oops. The heart also loves, feels, thinks, and remembers and communicates with other hearts. It stores information and continually, with each beat, pulses this information throughout the body. And it is far more than what modern science would have you believe. And it's also a pump that pumps the cellular symphony that is the very essence of your being. And it is a magnetic and radiating vortex and the true source of human power. A radiating vortex. As above, so below springs to mind. Also as within, also without, fits nicely as well. The heart is the center of your own vortex. And it's time to let it flow and also to fire it up. Few more pieces before we launch into two exposés this week, and I thought we would throw some light on a substance that's really covered too much, radon, and all about perspectives. Now radon is a radioactive, colourless, odourless, tasteless, noble gas occurring naturally as the decay product of radium, and it's one of the densest substances that remains a gas under normal conditions and is considered to be a health hazard due to its radioactivity. And its most stable isotope, 222Rn, has a half-life of 3.8 days. Now, due to its high radioactivity, it's been less well studied by chemists, but a few compounds are known, and radon is formed as part of the normal radioactive decay chain of uranium into 206Pb. Now, uranium has been present since the Earth was formed, and its most common isotope has a very long half-life of 4.5 billion years, which is the time required for one half of the uranium to break down. But how would they know it takes 4.5 billion years? Because essentially what they're saying, according to their records anyway, uranium has been breaking down since the formation of the solar system. Does that make any sense? Thus, uranium and radon will continue to occur for millions of years at about the same concentrations as they do now. Now, radon is responsible for the majority of the mean public exposure to ionizing radiation, and it is often the single largest contributor to an individual's background radiation dose and is the most variable from location to location. Radon gas from natural sources can accumulate in buildings, especially in confined areas such as attics and basements, and it can also be found in some spring waters and hot springs. But according to a 2003 report, the EPA assessment risks of radon in homes from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, evidence shows a clear link between lung cancer and high concentrations of radon. Oops. With 21,000 radon-induced US lung cancer deaths per year, second only to cigarette smoking, which is not correct. Smoking was the previous fear-based illness prior to COVID, remember? 21,000 radon-induced lung cancer deaths in the US per year. Thus, in geographic areas where radon is present in heightened concentrations, radon is considered a significant indoor air contaminant, which actually proves the folly of lockdowns being far more dangerous than going outside. And EPA estimates that your home is 5 to 8 times more contaminated than outside. Like I said, perspective. So that was back in 2003, 21,000 radon induced lung cancer deaths per year. It is now 30,000 American deaths per year, which far exceeds the numbers of the COVID scam, and yet little is done or said about it. Where is the fake national media and government outcry over this? And what about the outcry over the third leading cause of death of Americans being medical malpractice? Why weren't they interested in Americans' health when 20 to 30,000 are dying from this gas? Like I said, perspective. We're going to cover a small excerpt of a book about Navy SEALs, which highlights something we've said quite often in our show, but the SEALs may be the only pop culture heroes to emerge from the disastrous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, because they're the guys who killed Osama bin Laden, or so we are told. In reality land, bin Laden died of kidney failure in December 2001. So that ends that nonsense. But in blockbuster movies and best-selling books such as American Sniper and Lone Survivor, they battle not only a ruthless enemy but also risk-averse generals, which is correct, incompetent politicians, which is even more correct, and an indifferent citizenry. Now, the article said America might have lost its post-9/11 wars, but the SEALs won theirs, at least in their memoirs and also at the movies. But more quietly, the conventional Army and Marine Corps units in Afghanistan and Iraq often told a different story of the SEALs' exploits. In their version, the shadowy special operators swooped into villages at night with little warning, knocking down doors, killing civilians, and creating new enemies who mounted even more furious attacks on the US troops that were left behind to clean up their mess. And David Phillips Alpha, Eddie Gallagher, and the War for the Soul of the Navy SEALs draws a bit from both of these narrative traditions. And the core of Phillips's book is Special Operations Chief Eddie Gallagher, who's a senior enlisted SEAL, an anti-hero who is portrayed as possessing almost superhuman powers. Possibly a super soldier program then. And in Phillips' telling, Gallagher is a narcissistic sociopath with ice blue eyes who opens fire on old men and little girls. And the Navy's failed attempt to convict him of murdering a badly wounded Islamic State war prisoner during the 2017 battle for Mosul, and a crime that Gallagher seemed to brag about in text messages, results in not only his acquittal, but also forced the resignation of the Secretary of the Navy. I guess that guy is a high-level program member then, based on that exchange. But Phillips' book raises an uncomfortable question. What if the SEALs are terrible at their jobs? And SEAL leaders chose Gallagher's Alpha Platoon for the mission to liberate Mosul from the Islamic State because they believed that the unit and Gallagher were amongst the Navy's best. But in combat, Gallagher and Alpha Platoon were a disaster. And rather than focusing on the enemy, Gallagher's men felt obligated to fire warning shots at women and children in an attempt to keep them away from their chief, who said they tried to kill just about every civilian who wandered into his rifle sight. And Phillips describes the pressure that weighed on Special Operator First Class Dylan Dilley as he sought to protect Iraqis from his boss. And he said it was exhausting, the tension of being forced to fire at people to make them flee in terror without accidentally killing them left him covered in sweat. Yet another myth exploded about the American military and their non-heroic exploits. It's all based on lies. And it's largely another reason, apart from the drugging, why most American servicemen are not allowed back. They're just sent on another tour in case they talk. And in reality, American soldiers are told to stir up the war, not defuse it. And yet for that, they are given badges of dishonor and worshipped by a gullible public who are criminally short of knowledge on these matters. And in the future, the real truth must be told. And less of this Hollywood-based heroic American military bullshit. There's nothing heroic about killing people. Particularly people who have not attacked you. Now, the shambolic ways of the US military has been laid to bear for the world to see with the events surrounding Afghanistan. They failed to stop the bombing, then launch a missile strike on an alleged bomb plot, which ended up killing 10 civilians from one family, and the Pentagon said they didn't know when the evacuations would be finished. Are they telling us, after being there for 20 years, they never had an exit strategy? Seriously? 20 years and no exit strategy. We are paying the DOD $1 trillion a year, and they can't formulate a simple plan other than to blitz innocent people and their infrastructure from 30,000 feet. Or is it unfolding as I warned a few years ago, where I said they would all be replaced? Make them look incompetent on a global scale. Scale back their involvement. Gradually replace them with their technology and close them down. Just like what happened with the British and Dutch military groups of the past. And it's time to rethink military strategy and stop using it as a harvesting group to bully countries out of resources and fair elections and develop of a proper military of defence, not attack. And then combine it into a globally equal military in defence of the planet, not for the benefit of greed-based psychopathic overlords. Now, John Kirby at the news conference said this: make no mistake, no military on the face of the earth works harder to avoid civilian casualties than the United States military, and nobody wants to see innocent life taken. Really? Do you really think we're all that stupid, Mr. Kirby? Hundreds of thousands of deaths in Iraq just to capture one man. Possibly as many as 2 million to capture one man and a band of criminals funded by an agency on our own soil, and you think that is avoiding casualties? And what about the hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans killed by so-called friendly fire? Did you work hard on that? You know, this is child-level thinking. And it's not an Xbox game. This is real life. And the US military have shown they have no value in life whatsoever, including their own soldiers. Corrected, soul dyers. In this past week, Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, who stood up at great personal risk to himself, and he and other Marines are pissed off at senior leaders' lack of planning, strategy, and more importantly, accountability for their mistakes. And one hopes that the clown bullies don't make an example of him, because the man spoke the truth. And all this as the US Army is looking for recruits for internment resettlement specialists. Why not just call it as it is, gulag bullies? And the American people need to turn on the US military, and quickly, not the soldiers. And perhaps it's fitting to mention George McGovern, who was fiercely anti-war through the 1960s and 70s, who said this in Congress: every senator in this chamber is partly responsible for sending 50,000 young Americans to an early grave, and this chamber reeks of blood. Every senator here is partly responsible for that human wreckage at Walter Reed and Bethesda Naval and all across our land. Young men without legs, arms, genitals, face or hopes. There are not very many of these blasted and broken boys who think this war is a glorious adventure. Do not talk to them about bugging out or national honour or courage. It does not take any courage at all for congressmen or a senator or a president to wrap himself in the flag and say we are staying in Vietnam because it's not our blood that is being shed. But we are responsible for these young men and their lives and their hopes. And if we do not end this damnable war, those young men will someday curse us. Our pitiful willingness to let the executive carry the burden that the Constitution places on us. And in a retort to the powerful Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John Stennis, suggesting that US troops might have to return to Cambodia, McGovern declared, "I'm tired of old men dreaming up wars for young men to fight. I'm tired of old men dreaming up wars for young men to fight." 50 years later, that still applies. And therein lies the problem. Old, mind-controlled puppets at the highest offices of the military commit young people to their deaths, harm and drug addiction, and it's high time it was stopped. And it's high time the American people stop praising war efforts and learn to accept and work towards peace efforts, because that is the adult thing to do. Right, two exposés before the final piece. A think tank group called the Project for a New American Century, PNAC, is under the microscope. And this was a neoconservative think tank that was based in Washington, D.C., that focused on United States foreign policy. And it was established as a non-profit educational organization in 1997 and founded by William Crystal and Robert Kagan. And of the 25 people who signed PNAC's founding statement of principles, 10 went on to serve in the administration of the US President George W. Bush, including Dick Head Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, R. James Woolsey, Elliot Abrams, Robert Zoellick, and John Bolton. I haven't heard that name in a while. One of the worst psychopaths. And yes, he's Hebrew Anunnaki. Richard Perle. He was the brains behind the Cheneys, Rumsfelds, and certainly Idiot Bush. Now, one of the PNAC's most influential publications was a 90-page report titled Rebuilding America's Defenses: Strategies, Forces and Resources for a New Century. And citing the 1997 Statement of Principles, Rebuilding America's Defenses asserted that the United States should seek to preserve and extend its position of global leadership by maintaining the preeminence of the US military forces. Hence, the increase to around 900 US military bases globally. I wonder how many Americans knew there was that many. But in reality, they don't have an official number of how many bases there are. They don't know. And we, the people, are paying for those bases. And the common sense question is, what benefits have we had from them? And why are we paying for psychopathic think tank policies? Now, by the end of 2006, PNAC was reduced to a voicemail box and a ghostly website with a single employee left to wrap things up. And when one closes down, another one pops up. Now, Watch Behind the Headlines correspondent Dan Cohen explains how top foreign policy reporters are linked to the US government, weapons industries, and also oil corporations and the very forces they are supposed to be held accountable. And he said, imagine a country where there's no separation between the government, the military, and the media. And a lot of Americans would think of China, Russia, or North Korea. But it's a perfect description of the United States today. And he said, here in Washington, the think tank inside this nondescript building, a center for a new American security. So it went from PNAC to CNAS, is the clearest example of just that. And CNAS is a premier militarist think tank in the nation's capital, especially for the Democratic Party administrations. And it's funded by the State Department and the Pentagon, and has taken more money from weapons companies over the last several years than any other think tank. No, it's funded by we the people, because it's the people who fund the State Department and also the treasonous Pentagon. And on top of that, it's funded by oil companies, big banks, and right-wing governments, and basically the most destructive forces on the planet. Now, for President Joe Biden, CNAS serves as a farm from which key positions in his administration are cultivated. That was an interesting term, the author of that document. He used the term a farm. And the farm is the remit of the CIA and their differing divisions. They're all called farms. And in fact, at least 16 CNAS alumni are now in key positions in the Biden Pentagon and the State Department. But what's most shocking is that several national security and foreign policy reporters from elite US media outlets are affiliated with CNAS, no surprise there, and therefore indirectly affiliated with and likely paid by the US government and corporations, again the very forces that they should be holding accountable. And for more than 20 years, New York Times Washington correspondent David Sanger has relentlessly pushed deceptions to con the public into supporting US aggression and war. Sanger, born in and born to, went to Harvard, is a member of the CFR and the Aspen Strategy Group that included such infamous clowns like Condoleezza Rice and fellow Jewish psychopath Madeleine Albright. Now, from the George W. Bush administration lies about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, to lies about Iran attempting to create nuclear weapons, and evidence-free claims from intelligence agencies about Russian cyber attacks. And these incendiary allegations were taken at face value with a clear goal to pressure the then President Donald Trump to ramp up aggression against Moscow, while conveniently filling the pockets of Sanger's weapon industry benefactors. Oops. Now, Sanger's neocon cyber war fantasy was even turned into a movie by HBO. And today, David Sanger is onto the COVID-19 lab leak theory. And he's been at the front of every pro-Pagan Dark campaign that not only provides justification for aggression and war, but also helps generate huge profits for CNAS funders. Now, Sanger is just one of several New York Times, Washington Post and foreign policy reporters who have residencies at CNAS, and presumably that comes with a sizable financial component. Now, the reporter emailed CNAS to ask whether it pays these reporters, but they didn't respond. I guess that's a yes then. And Sanger's colleague, Eric Schmidt, senior correspondent and covering national security for the New York Times, is also in residence at the CNAS. Now, back in 2020, Schmidt was promoting the obviously false Russian bounties story, which was later retracted after it had served its political purpose to force Trump to take a harder anti-Russian stance. And he said Smith was a reliable promoter of intelligence claims about Russian hacking, yet never displaying a scintilla of skepticism. And he dutifully portrayed the Trump administration's aggression against Iran as defensive. And the Washington Post at one point found this kind of blatant media corruption at least questionable. And in 2011, the Time magazine launched a series in collaboration with CNAS to promote war propaganda, and the Post published an article questioning the ethics of that partnership. But if you fast forward to 2013, billionaire Jeff Bezos of Amazon buys the Washington Post, and its correspondent David Finkel becomes a writer in residence again at CNAS. Now, during that time, Finkel wrote two books on the US war in Iraq, The Good Soldiers and Thank You for Your Service, and just the kind of whitewash of the war that CNAS funders would want the public to consume. David Finkel, born too. Michael Gordon is another. He spent 3 decades at the Times. Among his greatest accomplishments was, alongside Judith Miller, promoting the Bush administration's Iraqi weapons of mass destruction deception. And Gordon was the first to report that Iraq and Saddam had stepped up its quest for nuclear weapons and has embarked on a worldwide hunt for materials to make an atomic bomb, citing anonymous US officials. And now at the Wall Street Journal, Gordon has spent months pumping out Wuhan lab leak propaganda, once again promoting claims of intelligence officials without any skepticism. And Greg Jaff is a Washington Post national security reporter and another writer in residence at CNAS. And his article on the US withdrawal from Afghanistan quotes Elliot Cohen, a former Bush administration official who is now a fellow at CNAS. And Jaff and Cohen's shared affiliation is never disclosed in the article, which is an obvious breach of the most basic journalistic ethics. Elliot Cohen, born too. Tom Shanker used to be part of the CNAS writer-in-resident program when he was at the Times writing on US wars. In 2012, Shanker wrote this blog promoting a CNAS study without revealing his affiliation. And once again, a major conflict of interest and ethics went out the window. There is also Rajiv Chandrasekharan, who spent two decades doing public relations for US wars at the Post and is now doing PR for Starbucks. Thomas Ricks, whose career has spanned posts at the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post and the Foreign Policy magazine. And Ricks is a cold warrior who has publicly stated that Putin is attacking the United States just like Osama bin Laden did, and that Americans defending Putin are no different from those defending bin Laden. Now, some of this information isn't new. It was reported in The Nation more than a decade ago. But Ricks did an interview on Fox in 2012 about the Benghazi attack and walked out after 90 seconds, citing Fox was an arm of the Republican Party. But the issue has only gotten worse as US politics has shifted right, spy agencies have gained more power in the media, and the new Cold War has accelerated. And he said there's no real separation between the myriad of revolving doors and cash flow between the weapons manufacturers, think tanks, the US government and the media. It's incestuous, bloviating blob capable of producing one thing and only one thing, war. So when you think of the military-industrial complex in a permanent war state, don't forget about what might be the most important component of all, the media. A very good article that exposes the hidden nest of vipers everywhere in political circles, all backed up by criminal media, who are but patsies for the intelligence agencies. Exposé 2. An uncomfortable fact, which too many commentators tend to run away from out of fear, ignorance or intellectual dishonesty, is the fact that the world financial system is sitting on the verge of a global financial meltdown of $1.2 quadrillion, derivatives time bomb, which former Bank of England Governor Mervyn King stated in September of 2019 is on the verge of financial Armageddon. Now, this grim reality was known long before the COVID pandemic was launched during October 2019's event 201. And it is this oncoming financial meltdown that underlies the war drive against China, which certain Western geopoliticians fear will shape the new system which they sought to control. Now, France's Bruno Le Maire laid out this fear in the most candid way in July when he said, unless we are able to reinvent Bretton Woods, the new Silk Roads might become the new world order. It is the new world order. Repeating the past with the Asians, sub-grey race, and the modern term Jews, they ran the trading posts all along the Silk Roads and collected many shekels. And as time moved on, they then used the Knights Templar of the Church to underpin their looting and highway robbery of the public. And so, what role does Canada play in this? And how does this affect the shake-up of the current Canadian government, now moving into a snap election on September the 20th this year? Why would Chrystia Freeland, a Rhodes Scholar, more proficient in regime change than banking, be given the reins of Canada's economic order during these trying times? Freeland, like her alt-media patsy sister Alana, are establishment clowns. Alana, like the other alt-media patsy who's disappeared now since we exposed her, Cara St. Louis, real name Orendorf, both were products of the Waldorf training school, not teaching school. Think Svali. So, involved in all this is a guy called Mark Carney, who is a UN Special Envoy on Climate Action. Well, I never. And he's the former head of the Bank of England and leading organiser of the upcoming COP26 summit to be held in the UK this coming November. Now, Carney, the eco-warrior, takes the helm again. And when Carney stepped down from the position of the Governor of the Bank of Canada in 2013 to become the first non-British governor of the Bank of England since the private central bank was created in 1694, it was made clearly known that this Oxford-trained Canadian technocrat had been vetted by some very high-level powers. Now, after training, no surprise, for many years as a Goldman Sachs investment banker, where his activities helped fuel the bubble that nearly brought down the world economy in 2008, Carney was brought into the governorship of the Bank of Canada to take on the role as the clean, conservative-minded Canadian central banker navigating through the chaos which his former employee helped create. And it was at this time that Carney became a member of the Rockefeller Foundation Group of 30, a foundation board member of the World Economic Forum, well, I never, and a leading participant of Bilderberg and the Davos events. And while still Bank of Canada governor, Carney was handed the keys to the Bank of International Settlements Financial Stability Board by fellow Goldman Sachs man Mario Draghi back in 2011, where he managed global derivatives regulation, which is the fuse of the international weapon of mass financial destruction, which is now bursting at the seams. But after 7 years as governor of the Bank of England, the world economic system has been stretched to its limits and the oncoming collapse has been accelerated by a global pandemic. No, the pandemic was planned to cover for it. The oncoming collapse has nothing to do with COVID. COVID just provided them with a backdrop because of efforts by the trustee at the time and the team rendered their banking system defunct. And due to their financial stealing, they lost trillions of dollars in available funds. And the money in circulation went from 123 trillion global GDP to between 40 to 60 trillion. And so they needed a lockdown of businesses and cash flow, whilst needing a cash flow themselves to fund the lockdown, which was duly provided by Trump via the trustee. Now, after 7 years in the City of London, Carney returned back to Canada to shape the Build Back Better programme, which essentially laid out a policy of decarbonisation in a post-COVID era. And August 10th of last year, it was first announced that Mark Carney was running a task force to restart the economy, titled the Canadian Pandemic Recovery Plan, which aimed at putting into motion those, quote, Green New Deal reforms, unquote, that was laid out during the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Summit of July 14th, 2020. The Green Deal in America is the remit of Mr. Pelosi. But the Great Reset fraud, and this program is little more than a cover for global depopulation and world government run by the same arsonists who have lit the world economy on fire in the first place. And echoing the Great Green Reset program, Freeland pointed out on August 18th that the collapse of jobs, irreversible shutdown of businesses, the unmanageable growth of a $343 billion deficit, and the phase-out of emergency response benefits will need to be green and driven by the goal of decarbonisation. And when she was asked about what is decarbonisation specifically, Freeland stated, of course, it has to be a part of it. Part of what? And it said, I think all Canadians understand that a restart of our economy needs to be green. What, Dr. Green? Why green? What does it mean? and most will assume it's healthy living and to do with plants. But what if it is the Dr. Green program of which Canada is infamous for? What is decarbonisation? Well, people are carbon. And she then smiled and stated that this crisis is actually a wonderful opportunity, she said. Yeah, indeed it is, for elites and psychopaths. And she was calling for a new hierarchy of values which will shape the new system which Carney and Freeland, both Oxford-trained technocrats, will come online in short order. And Carney stated that the greatest test whether this new hierarchy of values will prevail is climate change. And for anyone sick of the immoral monetarist religion of free markets that have run roughshod over the world for the past 40 years of post-industrial decay, war and speculation, the proposition to change our hierarchy of values may seem like a breath of fresh air. Not if it's done by the same psychotic people, it won't be. And the problem is that the drive of a green economy of green bonds, which are war bonds, green grids, carbon taxes, caps and trades, and green banking will tend to cause humanity as a whole to suffer immensely and will strip nation states of their productive industrial potential, which is needed to resist the will of a transnational oligarchy. And like all nations, Canada's economy is extremely reliant on fossil fuels, and every attempt made to create green infrastructure grids has resulted in massive energy price spikes for consumers, unreliable electricity prone to blackouts, and massive taxpayer subsidies to keep green industries financially viable, all of which is a lie. And these problems have required the emergence of green reset task forces using a pandemic to force through changes which would never be democratically accepted under normal circumstances. Now, the Carney Freeland Great Reset Task Force is being underway for the past several years, and both Carney and Freeland have been laying the groundwork for a new system of measuring value aimed at reducing both national sovereignty and nations' physical capabilities to sustain human life, while simultaneously and quite ironically doing grave damage to the environment, which is why it's all fake. And for the starters, Carney's Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which is co-run by New York billionaire Michael Bloomberg, born in, born to, aims to force all companies in the world to disclose all activities that either create carbon dioxide or disrupt supposed states of natural equilibrium, which mathematical ivory tower ecologists presume govern all natural states. All carbon dioxide, which we need. And on February 2020, Carney joined in with Sir David Attenborough in launching the COP26 Green Private Finance Initiative, finance being the operative word, to ensure that every professional financial decision has to take climate change into account. The right framework for reporting risk management and returns will embed these considerations and help finance a whole economy transition. To achieve net zero, every company, bank, insurer and investor will need to adjust their business models for a low carbon world. And Sir David Attenborough has been a lifelong friend of Prince Philip and a neo Methuselah guru who has attempted to teach the world that all of our woes stem not from systems of empires but rather because of overpopulation, which is utter rubbish. And a recent call to leaders to correct this problem using the cover of COVID-19 is one of the countless testimonies to this misanthropic philosophy. And the Green Bankers Climate Compact, which Carney pioneered, would ensure that companies which are considered dirty would never receive loans from banks, and any insurance they received would come at impossibly high premiums as punishment for their climate offending ways. Yes, collect all their monies using dirty techniques that damage the planet. Now we'll go green and control who operates and who doesn't. That's what they're saying. And he said, as a shining role model for good green behaviour, Carney has cited his former employee Goldman Sachs has already ruled out any future financing for oil drilling, thermal coal projects or Arctic development, which sounds good. But, there's always a but. In his paper, 50 Shades of Green, Carney stated that all dirty companies with poor climate grades will either not receive loans or receive loans at such high levels of interest that they will be artificially bankrupted by taxing polluters to death. Okay, that sounds good. Let's start with the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, JP Morgan, the Warburgs and many other bloodline family psychopaths that has harvested and ruined the planet for their own greed and control purposes. Let's start with them, shall we? Now, the term dirty companies are known as brown companies, yet more colour-coded programs, it seems. Now, as Carney said in September 2019, the firms that anticipate these developments will be rewarded handsomely, and those that don't will cease to exist, which is exactly what is unfolding. Essential businesses, remember? And yet another seducement program. Do as we say, and we'll give you loads of shekels. Don't, and we'll shut your business down. And then they said this. This means that every company working along China's Belt and Road Initiative in Eurasia, the Middle East and Africa would not exist in Carney's world, while any Western company which could actually participate positively in the multipolar dynamic would be cut off of all credit and die. What about Eastern companies? Why only Western? Oh, and we're back to the world's finances going east again. After companies have proven their greenness, simply being approved for bank loans will not be enough to carry out their business. And here Carney and his colleagues at Canada's Infrastructure Investment Bank plan to issue green bonds. Remember, bonds are war debt instruments, which today amount to only 5% of all global bond issuances, but which Carney hopes will soon attain the $3.5 trillion in energy sector investments needed every year for decades, which are required to keep warming below 1.5 degrees. $3.5 trillion in energy sector investments needed every year. What was the American budget just passed for? $3.5 trillion. Are we seeing the picture now? And by rewiring the Canadian economic system to this new system of values in time for the November 2021 COP26 summit in the UK, where he will act as British climate advisor and key organiser. And Carney hopes that the Canadian model will be internationalised so that climate change will affect the value of virtually every financial asset. And so they're setting up a new system, or planning to anyway, of economic value. But the problem with Carney's post-COVID vision is that value is tied not to the rising of living standards, human creative reason, or national productive powers of labour that characterised the creative growth of human civilization for the past several centuries, but rather upon the total inverse. By placing values on, quote, reducing human activity, reducing carbon footprints, reducing traces of human activity upon the earth, the potential to sustain life will not only be consciously reduced, but financially incentivized. Reducing human activity. Reducing traces of human activity upon the earth. What does that tell you? Depopulation, which may well be underway via the COVID jabbing. And under a new Green Deal, humanity will effectively be imposing forms of energy and practices onto ourselves. No, we won't. It's got nothing to do with us, only psychopaths. But we will stop it, which will ensure that we will never participate in any large-scale projects characteristic of the New Silk Road, Polar Silk Road, asteroid defences, etc., and will never become capable of freeing themselves from a Malthusian class of supranational bankers managing a post-nation state world order from above. From above. And the author said, if the world is truly as closed, finite and entropic as the misanthropic minds of an Oxford-trained technocrat like Mark Carney, Chrystia Freeland or David Attenborough, then this sort of post-COVID world order would admittedly be the way to go. If, on the other hand, we happen to live in an open system, creative, anti-entropic universe and express a species characteristic of transcending our limits to growth by making new discoveries and translating those discoveries into new scientific and technological progress, then not only should Freeland, Carney and the other Green New Dealers be removed from all positions of high office, but nations should join the multipolar alliance, which puts value on increasing humanity's potential rather than killing off our species under a 21st century bloodletting. We'll be back with the final piece. Final piece tonight. Due to nefarious elements within the town I reside, with perhaps the interference of another show in town, they decided at short notice in their wisdom that my time in this town has come to an end. It's not surprising, and it may well turn out to be a prophetic moving and a beneficial one. I've loved being here and settled in better than I thought. But like all journeys, there comes a fork in the road, and my new path brings exciting prospects and projects. And I will be more free of the voyeuristic clowns who watch my every move here. Last Thursday was my last show in Durango. Today marks a new beginning for me, the show, and us. I look forward to my new adventure and look back with pride as to what I overcame and achieved being in this town. Some will argue it failed because of the split with Kim, but that was not the case at all. I have done much unheralded work without fanfare, long before Kim arrived in my field, and did much alongside of her, and also private work that didn't involve Kim before, during or after the split. Much work has progressed since the split, and others speak in harsh terms now of the trustee on many levels, now claiming that I was the driving force behind it all. That's not for me to say or to spout about, but it is interesting their assessments of our work together. One went forward with solutions, ideas and plans. One went backwards with a Black Sun General's puppet, with a plethora of failed predictions, rampant nastiness and a hit on her reputation that now appears to be in ruins. She went on, going on Look At Me on clown radio channels for relevance, and no doubt donations. And it's just embarrassing, really, and it's also very sad to boot. If you have to lower yourself to those types of shows for relevance, the great question people ask is, why does she seek what she already had and threw away in an all too familiar phase of wrath, no accountability and zero apologies? With wrong intent, there was no surprise, it tanked. I leave the town in much better energies than when I arrived, a solidarity amongst the others that reside close to here, and an understanding with the djinns who no longer play games to the levels they once did. I bade farewell to Durango and Colorado this week, and I move on with much pride, much satisfaction, and a vigorized sense of purpose for a new beginning. This has been the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name is Thomas Williams. Bye for now.